Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are coming to you live from a couple of places on the internet. We are live on Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, X/Twitter, Instagram, coming to you later on Spotify or Apple or Android or the app of your choice. And just a reminder, Justin's favorite part of the show, Google Podcasts going away at the end of the month.
That's where Justin's mom listens.
Yeah.
That sounds like an insult.
It's where my mom lives.
Oh, no!
Regardless, that is going away at the end of the month. So if you subscribe there, please subscribe literally anywhere else. We are
except
on every single
Google.
Major, except for Google Podcasts. Yeah,
don't. It's a shame a mom and pop. It's a shame a mom and pop podcast outfit like Google is really shutting down. You hate to see when they do that.
I used to, when I was a kid, I would go to Google Podcasts, you go through the spinner racks.
And the spinner rack of podcasts.
The new WTF is here. I love it. New episode of Serial. Gotta check it out.
It's all just Ricky Gervais over and over and over again. Remember him? He started podcasts, except for us, too.
Yes, exactly. Listen, we have a super, super packed show for you tonight. So I want to get into it with our first guest. He is the guy behind the Last Kids on Earth series, as well as the spinoff, The Last Comics on Earth. Ladies and gentlemen, Max Brillier. Max, welcome.
Hello. Hey, how's it going?
Oh, wait. Wow.
Did we surprise you?
Yes. Here we go. Sorry. Hold on. Hey. We're all holding up.
I'm looking vibe on the hold up. No. Oh, wait. I have the new one.
There you go. So, Max, you've got this hit series, The Last Kids on Earth. You've spun it off into a new series that, wait, I'm going to get the names right because I actually have it right here. Working with Joshua Pruitt and Douglas Holgate, who does the art on the first one. You've also got Jay Cooper doing art on this. Versus the main series, which is like it's a kids novel series, but has a lot of illustrations throughout. This is a full-on graphic novel series. What led to the inspiration here? What was the idea behind expanding it into full-on graphic novel?
Like full-on graphic novel thing? Money. I was like, those are popular now. it was a combination of things, like loving comics, but never having, almost never really having done like a true just graphic novel comic format thing. And hi, everybody. How you doing? Let's see you. I feel like I didn't do that. And so like when I started writing Last Kids, I wasn't like a parent or anything, but now I have a kid and we read lots of graphic novels together. She got really into Spider-Gwen and Squirrel Girl, which is like, that was huge. Which is not that Marvel needs any money, but like this, I'll shout out the Squirrel Girl podcast by Ryan North. It's the best thing ever. And so like I wanted to sort of write something that was like that a little bit, so that we kind of read together. And also I wanted to like the last kid series as it's gone on, it's gotten like a little bit more serious in like a okay way, I think.
Yeah.
But I wanted to just do something like really goofy and silly, because I was reading lots of that stuff with my daughter and I never got to write anything that was just like pure, like just like goofy, kind of no rules sort of thing. And so it kind of made sense to be like, what if the kids from Last Kids are making their own graphic novels on the side, like in the treehouse when they're stuck there, nothing to do, like they're not like not battling evil and all that stuff. So I was like, okay, let's see what that would look like. So that's something I did and like so many kids do. So yeah, that's where it came from.
And nice. You, correct me if I'm wrong, but Joshua Pruitt and you worked on the TV show together, or he worked on the TV show.
Is that yes.
Yeah, is that how he got hooked up with the book?
Yeah, so he was one of the writers on the show, as was I, And so there are five, six of us. And then I moved out to LA. I didn't live in LA then, but now I moved out here and lived close to him. And I was like, oh, we should be like, we became buddies. And I was like, oh, this is great. Like, what can we do together? And he's like super, super comic book dude, like massive. And so I was like, oh, that would be fun. And also like, the thing I don't like, my least favorite part of being a writer is like all the time you just spend stuck in your own head alone. And I was like, I want to write something with my friends and spend time with my friends. And if, yeah, that'd be great. So I was like, okay, maybe we could do this thing together.
That was well, so then how did that collaboration work then? Especially if there was more comic knowledge on his side, perhaps.
He screwed me.
Good.
Like the whole thing was, I was like, I had so much fun in the writer's room. I wanted to recreate that and like just be able to like hang out and like order pizza and work all that stuff. And so I was like, I sort of had this idea and started talking to him about it, talked to the publisher about it. And like, we're going to do it. Great. Let's do it. We'll do four books. This will be awesome. This will be great. And then I was like, okay, here's the plan. We're going to do this. And then he immediately moved like 200 miles south. So my whole time. So now we do this is all over Zoom. We've been for each of the books, we've done like a sort of like 1 week kind of getaway where I'll go down here and we'll like kind of try to hash it out, like the big picture stuff. And then it's a lot of Zoom, and then he still drives up here for work. He's like, I don't know how many miles, he's like an hour and a half away. And so he's up here near me for work like once a week. So like we'll get together in person and do stuff too. It was a lot of the first two books we're writing one right now, like at the end of one right now. It's supposed to do 2 weeks ago. It's supposed to like hopefully tonight we finish it.
Nice.
Final one you can read before it gets illustrated, which is scary.
No, tell them you're doing a podcast and you can't.
Yeah, this is important though. This is really important.
I got priorities. So the first two books and the second one, which comes out soon, midnight to 3 a.m. Zoom writing sessions, which sort of breaking both of us. So this one we try to like schedule like something real time, like during the day, and like be better about all that stuff. But it ended up being like less weird. So I think there's something to the like.
That's what I was just gonna ask. Like I feel like those midnight to 3, especially something like this where it's like, let's make a weird choice. Yeah. Let's add more bits. Like maybe that being a little broke-brained maybe help.
Like to the point where I was thinking like, oh, like all my best ideas come when I'm like completely fried. And I was like, I was like, is there a way to like, you know, live like this? And you know, yeah. I don't want to have to like, you know, go and like say, what is that movie where they, what's the Kiefer Sutherland movie where they don't sleep for a long time? They go,
not Flatliners.
The Flatliners? I think I'm mixing Flatliners and something else maybe, but like, yeah, I didn't want to get to like a Jacob's Ladder, like I'm seeing stuff space every time.
It's so funny that in this profession, we're all like, I think I'm better when I'm unhealthy. So yeah. I'm just going to be that way from now on.
Yeah, that's a dangerous way to be too. Because it's like you squeeze yourself. Like, you're like, oh, I mean, I'm only good after like two things of Goovers and when it's 4 a.m. and I haven't slept.
Well, just to talk about this book specifically, so people probably are familiar with the Last Kids on Earth series, which I think you pitch as Walking Dead meets Diary of a Wimpy Kid, or at least that was the initial pitch.
That was the publisher's initial. And I think it's still, we still use it a little bit. I always thought of it as like, it's just like the apocalypse would be really fun if you could do whatever you wanted. I would watch, you know, like watch those movies. Dawn of the Dead, anything, and it's like supposed to be really miserable. But I'm like, oh, the mall, that's awesome. You do anything you want. That was so much fun. And as a kid, it's like, you know, you're not worried about the other stuff. So yeah,
that was my takeaway just from this reading this book. I was like, oh, it's funpocalypse as opposed to relentless darkness of so many. Talk about Walking Dead. It's just like absolutely relentless sad.
Yeah, it's a kid. It's like, oh, cool. I can take my go kart through. Through them all.
Speaking of funpocalypse, that's an awesome nerd wall that you have behind you. Is there anything you would want to point out and showcase there?
So I built like a nerd office, like a Joe Bob Briggs drive-in like office for myself when I moved to Los Angeles. I built my buddy who was because of the strike, he's a set designer, and he built like an RV thing.
Wow,
like a fake RV.
Oh, look at that!
That's like cool. With the windows and everything, and outside is like my driveway.
Glorious! Look at that.
I don't know what else.
That's you're awesome. In the garage.
Yeah, so I'm in the garage in a fake RV, which then I built this whole thing. It's really cool. I do like all my school visits, podcast. I do all from here, and then it's all metal, so there's no internet connection at all. A giant Faraday cage for all your Zoom meetings. So I had to like rewire the whole thing, and then like also I can't get underneath it. If anything ever happens, it's a flood. It's like a nightmare, but it's also kind of it's like I love it, but it's sort of a nightmare. No, it's just a lot of stuff. It's just a lot my stuff. Gauntlet poster, my favorite ever. I have this
the Gauntlet video. Poster is awesome.
It's so good, and it was like it's original, and it was like $80.
Wow!
And then the whatever that like whatever you call those things it says Fortune and Glory, but then I lost the L, and I was like, oh wait, if you get rid of the L, it's Fortune and Glory, which I kind of like even more.
Ooh yeah,
it's kind of cool, right? It's like it has a happy accident. And there's lots of toys and. Also, my favorite is the ridiculously good Iron Giant figure.
Oh, look at that!
You got to spend up for that,
then. Dude. I mean, it's the point of articulation. It's like 55 million. You can do whatever you want. Like you can, you do the
frog. It's basically alive. That has more points of articulation than I do at this point.
Yeah, he's way more bendy than me in my best day.
So just to get back to the book for a second, okay, if that's right. Sure. Sorry, Pete.
We're having a fun apocalypse, Alex.
Yes. So you have the ninth book of the main series came out late last year.
Yeah.
The second book of the comic series comes out in April. This is getting back to kind of what we were talking about before without spoiling too much. You have your four main characters or a group of main characters who are pretty much under the gun to deliver a second volume of the book right at the beginning here, going into, again, for anybody who hasn't read it, but it's just this wild superhero story where they're going through a million different, very heightened apocalypses. I think you have a certain set of rules set out for Last Kids versus this is like, literally anything. You got Vampire Apocalypse, you got Planet of the Apes Apocalypse, you got all of it mashed together in a very fun way. How much, though, based on what you were saying earlier, was deadline-based in terms of the inspiration of the beginning here?
The concept is that they're late with it? That's the fun of it. Yes, that was all of it. I mean, I feel like I got behind on, like, book five back in, like, 2017 and I haven't caught up yet, so like I've been living like under the gun of deadlines like nonstop. So to be able to make the concept we're behind in our book was awesome.
Felt like coming home.
Yeah it felt like the dialogue came extremely naturally. But we planned perfectly, and they go through the months. They're like, wait, we had 3 months to do this. Like, where did it all go? And like, it literally is like, that's life. But I should also give like a shout out to, I don't know them at all, but the series, and it came out the same year as the first Last Kids book did. But the 13 Story Treehouse, which I read, my daughter and I read it together, got really into, and that was one of the inspirations behind Last Comics. Not inspirations, but like. Things that got me excited was that series is so like zero rules, goofy, silly, really fun. It's like just like wacky, anything can happen. And in each of those, there's like a publisher who they're supposed to be like they're writing and drawing their own things together, and they have to get in on time. So that I was also like, they did that, but I'm sure like a million things have done it too. So I should say that series is awesome, and. If you like that series, you'd like mine, and vice versa.
Nice. Now, okay. I have a question about. There's so many like layers of comedy and jokes for sort of different aged people. To say it politically, mm-hmm. What's a joke that you are like? Ah, I don't think that's gonna hit. It's too esoteric. It's too specific. More generally,
not even esoteric because I don't know what esoteric means. I don't think.
Like, it's just hyper specific, or
there's more Well, there's definitely like there's the jokes where it's like because we're on Zoom and like sometimes like it's in like Google Drive or something, like trying to, or sharing the screen. We're all just like type absurd things to see if Josh is like paying attention and vice versa. And and they're not like the night, it's like the jokes that are less clean. And then like sometimes I'll forget, my editor will be like, what is this? And it still goes to the editor. So yeah. Some of those,
whoops.
Yeah, like what is really, this is what's happening? Trying to think of like there's things that are really specific where it's like, if it's worth it, if it's like funny and specific, like in Last Kids, there's a thing. I always end up at this point because I like it so much. But in book five of Last Kids, they have like the characters have like a fake, like a sort of, they play like a Fortnite sort of thing, but real life with these monster characters trying to like kind of all get in the same team because they've been arguing and stuff's going on. And like the monsters are immediately like, what is the prize for achieving greatness in this game of yours? And the prize is like it's a VHS copy of Tremors 2. And like that, and they start chanting Tremors 2. And then one of them is like, that one only has Fred Ward. And like that was like so hyper specific that like, and my editor was like, what? And I was like, this one I'm fighting for. I love it. Like this is saying, cause that just killed me. So there's stuff like that. In both Last Kids and Last Comics, where it's like if it really makes me laugh, I'll like it, then it's like that's worth it.
That's actually the dictionary definition of esoteric. So I think you do.
Okay. I thought it was more Tremors 2. Fancier than that.
No, Tremors 2 reference with Fred Ward.
I got a cool Tremors thing. They never find a good Tremors merch like online, like old stuff. Like there's not a lot of Tremors stuff, but I finally found something cool.
Think about it, the Dune tie-ins, the possibility.
Yeah, right? Tremors, legitimately great. That is a great movie.
I can't speak to all the Tremors because there's a lot of ones you forget about. Maybe.
Two's not bad. First one's awesome. The rest are not good. I love the first one too much. It makes the rest not good. But I think the best like super specific jokes, esoteric you might say, are actually the ones that like, so when it goes to Jay, who's the illustrator, who does like the bulk of it, it's bookended by Doug's art with the characters in the real world. He draws stuff that like, he just takes it and runs with it and like adds in like a Where's Waldo level of like Easter egg type things. And those are like, after the first book, he realized it was like, the best thing we should do is just like, set scenes for him to like go nuts and like tee him up, because then he just draws like the best things ever. And there's like absurd little references that I'm still like, I'll be like doing a school visit and I'll be like, I'm like, wait a second, what is that in the corner there? And like I'll see something new. So Jay's like the master of those. Yeah.
So at this point, just to sort of round it up in terms of the books, you have the 9th volume that came out. The 10th mm-hmm. volume is of Last Kids is coming out sometime this year or next year.
I was going to say for the first time, I've lost track again. I forget exactly because we're shuffling things around with the Last Kids, Last Comic. Yeah. But I'm like, 2/3 of the way through writing the one after Monster Dimension, mm-hmm. and it'll be I think 2024. I hope, I forget. And then Last Comics, we're writing Last Comics 2 is in April, and then Last Comics 3 is next April, I believe. And then we're also doing something else. I announced it, so I can't say it. I don't know.
So to that point, before we let you go, I'm just curious. What is it like adding this extra level of difficulty in terms of doing everything? Because you've done a couple of series, you do a lot of things, but to have ongoing Last Kids on Earth, and now you're adding ongoing, presumably, or at least there's going to be 3 volumes, if not more, of Last Comics 4. On Earth. 4.
Wow.
So
at least 4. Yeah.
What is it like juggling all that stuff?
Yeah.
Well, like that's a part of it was when I started Last Comics was like, so for a little bit, I was doing 2 Last Kids on Earth books a year, because we did like there was like the main book every September, and then we did one that was like just about June, and she goes on her own little side quest and then comes back. And that way, like I wanted to sort of see the other characters and give them like their own sort of like screen time. And so I did one for June, one for Quint and Dirk together. But that was like writing 2 of those a year was too much. It was killing me. And so I was like, okay, what if we did like this? This would be sort of different feeling, like different, my brain would work a little bit differently. I'd write it with my buddy. It'd be super easy, way easier. And it's like, no, that didn't happen at all. So now I'm still doing two books a year, but like I have to think about them very differently. So it's supposed to like be like, oh, this is like a little bit less work. I think now it's actually like maybe a little bit more work. But it's really funny to like flex a different part of my like sort of muscle in my brain. And also because like I'll take stuff from Last Kids where it's like, that'd be funny, but that, like, that's way too silly for the main series because it's supposed to, you know, I got to keep some like rules. And I'm like, oh, that'll go into Last Comics because that's like a really dumb thing. And that's like the home of dumb things.
Yeah. It's nice to have two buckets.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's the big takeaway. Always have two buckets.
Always have two buckets.
Yes. Thank you. Perfect. A little bit of an esoteric reference, Justin, but we get it.
Max. I also don't know what that means.
I don't know. It's too highfalutin of a word, I would say. Max, thank you so much for coming on. The books are great. We appreciate the time.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, my kids are very excited to read these. They found them when I was getting ready, and they're like, oh! And so you've given us a gift.
All right. Anybody who wants signed ones or whatever? I'm talking to you for not everybody else.
The whole audience, the whole listening audience. It's amazing.
If you email me, I send you signed it. Anybody wants signed, I'll sign whatever you want.
Amazing. That's awesome. Max, thank you so much. Thanks for coming on. Great chatting.
Good luck out
Congrats.
There.
All right, there we go. Esoteric Two Buckets. If you want to check out his two buckets, one is the Last Kids on Earth series, which released the ninth book late last year, Last Kids on Earth and the Monster Dimension. And Last Comics on Earth, Too Many Villains, is coming out April 30th. So you can check that out. They're both super fun. Really
super
great books.
Ton of jokes.
Super
Very
fun.
Funny.
Yes, definitely check them out. Next up, we have another great guest for you. She is the creator of Kira and the Maybe Space Princess. Yeah. That just came out from Random House Graphic. Ladies and gentlemen, Megan Brennan. Megan, welcome. Hey. Hello.
Yeah. Hi.
Hey, hold on. We're showing off books. So
yeah. Oh, cool.
There we go.
Oh, yeah.
It's real.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I think this is actually a reader's copy, so it's in black and white.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Megan, this book came out last week. It's great. It's super fun. Per the title, it's about magical girls. Given that it's out in the world, have you been able to see it on shelves anywhere? Have you spied it? Have you anything like that?
Spied it.
It came out on the 5th. And so I decided, I'm not getting any work done today, on that day. So I ended up going to, I'm in Brooklyn. So we went to Kinokuniya in Manhattan, which is a amazing place to buy all kinds of nerd stuff. And they had it there, which is very exciting because I feel like this book has taken so long to become a completed finished product that it was a little alarming at first.
Well, let's talk about this a little bit. And I actually want to just sort of generally ask a question before we even get into the specifics of the book. What is the, this is, I guess, a big one, but what is the enduring appeal of magical girls? Why do people spark to that concept so much?
I mean, from a purely selfish standpoint, the reason that I like it so much is that when I was like 12 or maybe 11, I was sort of into like newspaper comics. Like I liked Mutz. I liked Calvin and Hobbes. And like, I like to draw, but kind of the same amount that like any kid likes to draw. But I had a friend who like introduced me to Sailor Moon, and it was like, what do you mean there's comics that are like a long fantasy story with a girl protagonist and she's allowed to want to be like sparkly and pretty and like kind of a crybaby, like all the things that I feel like every 13-year-old feels like at heart. there's so many more comics that appeal to girls now, like even in the US, but at the time it felt like this was the only thing that was like that and like the Turtle series were all that I was like obsessed with for a while.
Well, one of the things that I love about this is it takes that idea and looks at it in a very meta sort of way. We're in a world where, I don't know if it's everybody, but pretty much everybody seems to be a magical girl, except for our main character. You're tweaking, you're playing with the tropes. What was, when you were setting up this world, what was the initial inspiration there? What was the initial idea?
I was first doing a couple pages for an anthology that I was signed up to be in that was like an homage to shoujo comics of our collective youth. So I was like, I have to do a magical girl story. It would be ridiculous to do anything else. So I did like a couple pages of that, and it was so much fun. And I ended up like, I was like, oh, if I do a couple more pages, I can put out a zine. So I can do that. And then I made another zine and then another one because it was just really fun to play in that sandbox. And like the tropes are so silly, but that's what's so fun to me is it's just completely can do anything.
Well, what about the characters themselves? What was important to you? Let's start with Kira. What was important to capture with her?
I really wanted her to be not a perfect person. Like she's, especially in the beginning of book one, she's kind of a brat. She like, there's a reason why she hasn't made friends with a lot of kids at school. She's kind of off-putting, and I think she doesn't even realize that. And like, she ends up finding friendship and finding ways to stand out that are like healthy instead of like yelling at people. I think like a lot of times when there's a girl heroine in things, especially when it's like for kids and like if there's one girl and she has to be the pretty princess character, they don't get to be like kind of horrible in the way that real kids are. So that was really important to me.
Nice. And the other character though, who I absolutely love is Catacorn, who is this, I won't say exactly what's going on with Catacorn, but Catacorn definitely pushes Kira's buttons a lot throughout the book. Again, what was the inspiration there, both in terms of the character itself and also the design?
I realized like when I had to go back for the end of this book and put in like about like work in progress, like how I made this book, I had drawn Catacorn in like a completely different form for a school project at School of Visual Arts years and years and years ago. And I just had so much fun drawing like those giant spaced out eyes and like the weird rubber limbs. So I kept like, I had that like in the back of my mind. So when I was like, oh, okay, Kira needs like a magical sidekick, it was like, okay, easy. I'll put her in. She's not what you want as a magical sidekick, especially when you want to look cute and you want to like be cool. You're not going to want a cat girl with like noodle arms. And she's really fun to draw and like really fun to write because she's weird, but she's also like really friendly in a way that Kira isn't. So that's like a really fun way that they play off each other.
Mm-hmm. Now, as a, my, kids are, I'm involved in like multiple unicorn conversations at all times in my household. So I'm curious, for you, what's the draw of unicorn or the variations on the unicorn? As a, because I find it to be like a near obsession in my house as well.
I mean, I loved unicorns as a kid. I mean, as all kids do, apparently.
Yeah, in my home for sure.
Yeah, and like they're fun to draw because you just have a little, you just put the little horn on, and it's like instead of just a regular animal, it's something magical. Even though it's so silly to just have a little horn sticking out of your head, and I think that's the. Once you start doing it, you can't stop.
Yeah, that tracks. And I love that, though, because it is true. It's like everything is normal. Everything is everyday or real, except for this one horn. And that makes all the difference.
Exactly. It's a whole different animal.
Yeah. The other thing that I was curious about with this was just the rules of the world. Given that you've got magical girls, I mean, the pages that we're looking at here, for example, right now, beyond Catacorn and beyond Kira herself, you've got like, Is this a bear person, a dog person, I guess, and various other magical creatures show up much later in the book, both of them to fight and team up with. So what were your guidelines there, or were there none?
It was partly that when you're drawing a comic in a school, you have to populate the school. So you have to, I ended up having to like make up like a little like chart for myself of, okay, here are some of the classmates. I'll just keep drawing them in the background. And like book one, I wasn't as stringent about that. And then there was like one scene where my note from my editor was like, this is a completely different kid in this panel who's in front of Kira, I have to fix. So if I'm drawing all these kids, I'd rather make them kind of more fun to draw, more fun to look at. And it also adds to Kira's like complex because part of it is that she doesn't have magical powers. She's very normal, but I was sort of sprinkling in some kids who are kind of normal, but they all kind of have like a thing in the way that when you're in like fifth grade, it feels like everyone else has like their thing that they, that makes them cool. And you're just floundering, even though everyone feels like that. So that was a lot of the, like, if there was something that I would have wanted to make an original character of when I was 12, I would, like, there has to be an angel boy, there has to be a werewolf, there has to be, like, a vampire and, like, a centaur. Like, it's important to me.
That's awesome. I really love the artistically and creatively this book, the pace of it. The kind of the things that come up are really awesome. As a kid who was also like a spaz and yelled a lot, I felt very seen. But I'm wondering, is this, did you pull from a lot of personal experience? Where, how do you kind of like sit down to write this?
It's funny because when I was doing the, like the zine versions, they were fully just like, I'm just going to make a comic about like the worst magical girl. But then when I had to adapt it to a graphic novel, it was suddenly like, oh, I should be caring about these characters because otherwise it's not going to fill a whole book. So I was kind of thinking a lot about like how I felt when I was in the fifth grade or the sixth grade and how it feels to be at that age where you're trying to figure out who you are, but also feel so awkward and uncomfortable and embarrassing no matter what you do. So I was trying to funnel a lot of that in there. I was not as outgoing as Kira. I was just in the corner drawing most of the time.
You touched on this a little bit before, but just because we're looking at this scene right now, the scene where we first encounter Katakuri is so horrifying.
Yes.
Just her crawling out of this trash can with eyes all over the place and everything. Talk a little bit about the inspiration behind that.
It was partly that I was trying to think of what the worst way to meet your like special magical sidekick would be. Like, you know, it's just, it should be something magical and special instead of just something is in your trash can and it's human sized and covered in garbage.
There you go. Good inspiration. well, awesome. Megan, now that this is out in the world, what, not to, I know it's only been a week, but like, what's next for you? Are you already planning the next thing? Is there, given the series is Magic Girls, do you have other Magic Girls on tap that you want to explore?
I'm currently working on the second one that I think now is going to be pushed back a little bit, but that's going to be out in like 26, but I'm like midway in. So it's kind of weird being like promoting book one that I feel like I finished so long ago. And like being deep into a second one that nobody can see yet. But it's really fun.
Yeah. I'm glad. The book is awesome. Congratulations, Megan. Congratulations on getting it out in the world. And I'm looking forward to more Magic Girls.
Yeah, can't wait for the second one.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
All right. Very fun. Thanks, Megan. Have a good night.
Congrats.
All right, there we go. Once again, the book is called Kira and the Maybe Space Princess.
Yeah, it's
right
fantastic.
Now in stores so everywhere. Fun. It's great. From Random House Graphic. And our final guest of the evening, one of our favorite writers here on the show. Very excited to have him on. Ladies and gentlemen, Jerry Dugan. Jerry,
hey,
hello.
Hey, welcome.
Hey, everybody. How are you?
All good. Right. Great. Thank you so much for coming on. Thanks for taking the time to chat. You have so many things going on right now. But I want to talk about a book that came out a couple of years ago that is great, and I'm hoping there will be a sequel at some point, The Dark Room. This book was awesome. A really fascinating and very dark mystery that explores a mystical world in a very different way than I've read before. I'd love to hear a little bit of your inspiration behind it, because you've got so many things going on here. You got vampires, you got werewolves, you got fairies, you've got haunted photographs and devils. There's this whole mythology you're laying out there, but at the same time, it's paced. It straddles the line between comedy and noir in a very nice way. I know I threw out a lot of things that were not exactly a question, but
well, no, I appreciate it. You know, thanks for picking it up. We, you know, I try always to write not just what I think the artist will want to write but be or draw, but to also be very successful at it. And I knew what Scott was capable of just from his Instagram and his poster work, and he's really an expert at drawing dead things. And so I was thrilled to be able to pitch him a lot of dead stuff to draw. That was really the goal, was just feed him fastballs right down the middle that he could just crush. And so we just talked about the things that he wanted to draw and the ways that we could subvert it. And I hadn't really done much in the horror space, even though I think some of my more successful stories at Marvel and my limited experience at DC had horror elements to them. So I was thrilled to be able to do it. So it's really about Scott. You know, the story for me was combining my love of photography and my love of comic books into this tale where the MacGuffin was a haunted camera. And honestly, that prologue that you see there, I knew that Scott was really talented. I wasn't 100% sure, because he hadn't done sequentials, what his appetite or what his aptitude was going to be for that. And Scott just crushed it. So at the end of that prologue, those pages were in, I was like, oh yeah, Scott, it would be my privilege to make comic books with you. And to answer your question, we're almost done with a whole, there'll be an announcement soon, because we're doing them as OGNs. It looks like we're not working. We're actually working real hard. We have, it's almost a completed book. Tamara should be getting the files to color soon. And I think she may have already started to flat it. So with a new adventure.
I wanted to ask you about the photography thing. I'm glad you brought that up, because you're, pictures are so great. I see you post them all the time. I mean, obviously people think of you as a writer and they think of you as a comic book writer. What draws you to photography? And do you see yourself as a aspiring photographer who's dabbling in writing, or vice versa?
You know, it just comes from having wanted to make comics, to draw comics as a kid. And I just didn't have that talent. But I have found that I can sort of whisper to people what I would like to see in comic books. And I've been successful. I was funny. I get why the AI programs are seductive for people, to give a writing prompt and then receive art back. I've been doing that successfully for a long time. But the difference is, obviously, you know, that I'm working with an artist who's bringing something of themselves to it, but I get the seductiveness of it. And to answer your question, I'm hopefully a skilled amateur, but an amateur. I don't, I really don't try to make money at photography. I loved photography. I was privileged and lucky enough to have even a junior high that had a dark room. And so I was in there, and we were making our own photographs, but we were also making our own like t-shirts and flyers and stickers and stuff. It was all, once you were doing silkscreen stuff and printing, it's all kind of the same thing. But the fun thing for me now is when I'm invited around the world to get to do comic book conventions, having the camera in my hand, it's great. It's a lot of fun. Who wants to sit in a hotel room?
Yeah. Do you ever take photos to use as a reference to give to the artists?
Yeah, occasionally I have done that. It's usually something that I found by accident. It's not necessarily something that I would like go, oh, I need to show this to one of my collaborators. But it has come in very useful.
And it is like the Eiffel Tower.
To where will you get it?
I want to say about. Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that it's fun to have as something that I don't try to make a living at. I think it's important to have creative endeavors that you're not trying to monetize. I love comic books. They're really my first love, but you know, working in them, it's hard to turn off the part of your brain that is always sort of analyzing why something works or doesn't work.
I was going to say, what I love about Dark Room is it feels like we're in the middle. Like we're saying, like Star Wars, Indiana Jones, those things where it's like, oh, we're just, I know we're opening this for the first time, but this feels like it's been going on for a long time. Is this the first story you conceived? Did you have any of the characters popping beforehand? Did you see a person dancing in Times Square made of bones that you were like, my guy?
You know what? It is, I used to go into Manhattan for comic book conventions, and there, that was definitely the days, you know, in the late 80s, early 90s, where, you know, I mean, I was at Comic-Cons in 87 when David Mazzucchelli was there, like with copies, probably his comps, selling, you know, Batman Year One and Daredevil Born Again and stuff. And but those were the days when, you know, there were all sorts of, you know, drummers out in the streets. And like, I wish I had a camera then. I really didn't start using my father's camera until a few years later. I mean, you know, our brains marinate in this stuff and then bring things forward, you know, watching, you know, drummers on, you know, like the paint buckets and dancing. And then, you know, someone will come around and see how many tips they can get. It was really, the New York was exciting back then. Maybe it's exciting again. I'm not sure. It felt like
it's a little different these days.
Yeah, it is a little different.
We have a lot more cops in the subway right now, but otherwise.
Yeah. But really, it's about what Scott, I would throw things at the wall. You know, we talk about pitching as writers, but I think it's always important for me to differentiate. I want to be like an utterly hittable pitcher. You know, I want my artist to go, oh, yeah. And what about this? Great. You know, I'm not trying to sneak anything by anyone. I'm trying to give Scott the prompts that of stuff like the stuff we're doing too in the second volume. There's a comfort level and, you know, I think there's not just a comfort level, but that there's the expectation of wanting to try to clear the bar that we set on the first one. And so things are funnier and cooler and weirder. And I hope the stakes are even bigger. We have a new bad guy and a new mysterious character that, is really right at home in this universe, and we just love it so much. I love that Scott loves it. You know, Scott's privileged enough to do a lot of cool things, but he loves comic books the most. And I told him, I said, "Well, it'll be my privilege to break you in. You're going to go off and do whatever it is you want to do next." But so we're hoping to do a trilogy of books. So I was glad, Justin, to hear you say that you know, you felt like you got dropped into the middle of this hectic universe because there's a lot more to come, I hope.
I love that in the you mentioned how you started working with Scott in the back matter, and I won't spoil it. Such a great story, and heartfelt and cool. So shouts to that. And I also want to say it reminded me of Neil Gaiman's book Neverwhere and stories like that, where it has that sort of like down to earth people and characters, but also they're diving so deep into fantasy worlds, and just the way to use all the shorthand that we all have as fans of this is really
cool. Well, that really you know, that high praise makes me feel very happy, you know, that we were able to make something that, you know, and obviously it can be hard sometimes when you're not writing Batman or you're not writing X-Men or Spider-Man, to be able to bring something that into a market that gets traction and that people love. And, you know, I was super grateful to be able to do it at Image, and that you guys found it and loved it is, you know, it really is gratifying. I don't take any of that for granted.
This is a little bit off it, but this just occurred to me when I was looking earlier. You had a pretty extensive preview of the book up on your Substack. You're active through your newsletter. Obviously, you have a lot of stuff you're doing at Marvel. You have stuff you're doing Image as well. This is a very broad question, but there's been so much discussion about promotion in the comic book industry, particularly with social media imploding. I was curious to hear your take on it. Where are you at now, and where do you potentially see it going?
It's a good question. You know, I think, unfortunately, comic books had a lot of eggs in the Twitter basket. And, you know, it had sort of taken over the Bendis board or the Ellis forums or the CBR forums for a while, or wherever it was that people were talking about comics. And it's actually really a shame. You know, it feels like that was an engine for people to be able to not just promote what they were doing, but promote their friends' work and obviously word of mouth. And it was an ecosystem, and it does feel like it's been dismantled. I think newsletters are a good alternative, but we miss a little bit of that. Maybe Instagram could be something that we reinvest in. The problem is, you know, these staring at your phones all day is ultimately bad for you. and there's not a, you know, we don't have Wizard Magazine anymore. And like, those were simpler days, sure, but there actually was something that was like charming. And I was a paid subscriber. This is, you know, I'm showing my Gen X now, but to, you know, comic book, God, what the hell is that? The newspaper that we would get like weekly.
Comic Shop News. Comic Shop News.
No, but Comic Shop News, you'd get at the comic shop. There was also there was a paid subscription that came to your house. That was, I'll think of it, but
Wall Street Journal.
The Wall Street Journal and all of the,
that's how they started.
It's a good question that does not have an answer, as far as I know, about what we will do about that. We even talk about it, you know, the folks that have new creator-owned coming out this year to go, hey, is there a way that we can provide, hopefully, a rising tide for all of us? What are we doing? And so we're talking about, you know, linking ads. You know, I'm going first in, I'll have an announcement this week about an Image book that will arrive the first week of June. So I'm one of the first ones, and then I'm hoping to be able to throw to, you know, a buddy's book who's in June, maybe they do something in July, and so on and so forth. And there's not a great answer. Obviously we love being able to do podcasts like yours, where we can talk about the work and promote the work and talk about the things that we love. But it's hard.
Well, and it's also frustrating because you got to do the work at the same time. Like, you have to make the comments, and that's where the heart is, and that's frustrating. So, Pete, just real quick before we get to your question, I just wanted to mention before I forgot. So every week on the show, we have a cocktail that is either curated or created by a professional chef down in New Orleans named Brett Macris. He just started up a new restaurant called Wild South that everybody should check out. He created a cocktail for you this week. The Duke's Dank Dark Room is what it's called. It's bourbon, Aperol, Amaro, blood orange juice, maraschino cherry, and orange peel.
That's really cool.
Gives a little bit of sense.
I'm going to get this over to Scott too. He's going to love that.
Yeah, I'll shoot it your way. Justin,
you should have Scott on, or I'll come on with Scott.
Would love.
Please. The book should be out in the fall, so maybe we'll do that around Halloween.
Hell yeah. Would love that.
Yeah, that'd be great. Well, cool. Over to you, Pete, on for cocktail time.
Excuse the long wind up here, but first let me just say Dark Room, amazing. The idea that the eye of photography that is kind of brought forefront in this is such a cool vessel for this story, and I think pays off. Someone who spent a lot of time in the dark room, I could kind of tell from this book. So I love your work.
I appreciate it.
I love the humor that you bring to stuff. When I see your name on a project, I get very excited. Your Deadpool stuff, all the kind of like stuff that made me laugh so hard. What is it that attracts you to certain projects? What's your hook? What are you looking for to say yes to something when something goes by your desk?
Money.
Hey, I appreciate
that. The fans want to know.
No, I think, you know, you really have to approach all of this work, any work that you do, where the most important name on the book has to be your own. You have, like, I can't make someone not a Hulk fan, but I can make you not a fan of me, you know? And so I just try always to write what I would want to read that doesn't exist. And, you know, at Marvel and DC, for work for hire, you obviously want to, you need to play within whatever rules are established and about tone and about age. At creator owned, you just have to really want to create something that you have to love it, because it is, it's a grind. All the creator owned stuff is a wonderful grind, and it's I'm privileged to do it, but it is work, not just doing the work, but caring about the work, and then how many hats you're wearing, and trying to promote the work, and then get out there and even do store signings and such. It's a lot of extra work, but you do it because they sort of become like your children.
Wow, cool.
But also, by the way, just to say thank you, it was very kind words. The other thing I'm always looking for is, how can I tone shift, and how can we break your heart, right? Like, what are we doing that, like, will make you go, oh, maybe I want to, like, reread this, you know? And I think, you know, the comedy part of it always is, you better be able to tell a joke at the right time to just cut it. Otherwise, you know, you end up with something that has a very heavy sort of gravitational hold, and then you maybe don't want to go back to do it. But you just try to do what you love and be as generous as you can to your collaborators, and hopefully you make something special. So much of it is timing and luck.
Yeah. Real quick, Schweikler says, was it the Comics Buyer Guide?
It was the Comic Buyer's Guide. There it is. Exactly right. I appreciate I remember that. Thank you.
I was not a subscriber of that.
It was a real, like, honest to God, like, newspaper that would come folded up, and I just had, you know, a stack of them. They would go out every year, but I mean, that was, oh, you know, that was like the first time that I was exposed to so many things, to then go, oh, I gotta go read that, or the letters column mentioned this. I think it was even where I sort of got turned on to Miracle Man, you know. There was a discussion about comics. It was a place to read about comics and potentially see a letter printed. You know, I'm bringing letters columns back in the new Image book too.
Yes,
so I'm just gonna see if we get mail, and I believe we will. But again, another example of sort of, here's more work that I gave myself to do.
Writing long responses.
Answer, yeah. Letters columns now.
We got another question here from YouTube. This is from Stanley. Does Jerry like comic movies? Excited for Deadpool 3?
I am excited for Deadpool 3. I probably know more than I want to know about Deadpool 3, but it's, I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I think, you know, I really kind of laughed at the teaser. I thought was wonderful, but, you know, we'd seen Hugh as Wolverine. So I was like, oh, they're really saving the on-screen moment for him. I'm as big a fan of those guys as anybody. They, you know, I think Ryan himself is deservedly one of the best writers of Deadpool. You know, he's going to be a credited screenwriter on this, and I'll probably shut up, but I don't want to blow up. Yeah, Zeb, you know, Zeb's doing Zeb's accredited screenwriter on that movie too. And ooh, I'm super happy for him. You know, he's super talented, and yeah, I think fans are going to be really excited. It's going to be a really fun year. I'm excited for that. And I'm also really excited for having George Miller back with Furiosa.
Yeah.
Those are probably two of my most anticipated movies. And I think Ghostbusters, I hope that's really fun. So, yeah, I try to catch comic book movies in the theaters. I just saw Dune 2. I really enjoyed that. Ooh, not a comic book movie, but I'm in a really good town for movies. You know, I saw Dune 2 at the Chinese on the IMAX screen. It's a special place.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, the Deadpool is probably a good transition. We should ask you at least a little bit about X-Men. The era is coming to a close with X-Men 35, which you are one of the writers on. There's a whole team of artists. There's various stories. I'm sure you can't specifically talk about what happens because the story is still in progress, but I'd love to just get your thoughts on being part of this era and bringing it to a close in this issue. What was that like?
It was always a wonderful privilege. You could dream of writing comics and never get close to being asked to sit in this chair and being trusted with these characters and to help follow Jonathan. It was a dream job, really was. And we sat down and talked about it when we knew that this was going to be the dismount, and I said to Jordan and CB, I said, well, let's make it a jam. You know, I knew Kieran was going to be in there, and Al has some stakes. So we've always been collaborative in that office.
And you're so talking about Jordan D. White?
Yes, that's okay, right. Cool. Just so our editor, Jordan.
Michael Jordan.
D. White.
Yes. Michael B. Jordan.
That's funny. We knew what the end of this story was. We've been very confident in telling the story. I went in with the notion of, boy, the Cadillac version of this is a 3-year plan. And I got that, think what I hope will set this apart someday on a bookshelf is you rarely get to write the words, the end, in these ongoing superhero soap operas that we've been telling for, 75, 80 years. It's true. And those are rare moments that you should enjoy. And, I'm looking forward to what Tom Brevoort and all his creators are doing. I'm looking forward to being an X-Men fan again. And I hope, we still have some surprises left to play where we have tried not to spoil much story. When we told you that we were doing the Hellfire Gala, it was as camouflage for Planet Size X-Men. Nobody would ask us about Planet Size X-Men because they were looking at, Russell's designs or Mateo's designs and arguing about that stuff. We have had a really successful run. Like I'm very proud of it, and I'm very curious to see what will happen, how it will age. I don't really think I should get to be part of that discussion, and I have always tried to not look back and really ruminate much, other than to, hopefully have a critical eye about what you could do better, what you might do differently. That said, I think 700, I know it's going to be a hell of a comic book. The same way that I knew that last year's Hellfire Gala was going to be a hell of a comic book. It's, I'm really here because I loved Walt Simonson, and he and Wheezy took time in 89 or 90 to sit down and show me his thumbnail sketches for a Fantastic Four issue, and showed me that, because I knew even then I was not going to be a comic book artist. That wow. dream, I knew I was not good enough, but I was like, oh, there is a place for me in comic books if I can collaborate, if I could write for someone that doesn't want to, that for an artist that doesn't want to write for themselves. So it's got Walt Simonson is in there. Jerome's pages, you know, are incredible. And Jerome is doing an action beat that I've had in my back pocket for Nightcrawler for years that I've never got to deploy until now. And so
that's awesome.
It's going to be a killer comic book. And honestly, I also am aware we may be telling stories for folks that have never read the Krakoa stuff. So you'll be able to pick up X-Men 700 if you haven't picked up an X-Men comic book in 25 years. Oh, cool. And you'll know exactly what's happening, what the stakes are, and I hope you enjoy the hell out of it.
That's a wild thing to have to do, because I feel like this is a little bit like, hey, we finished, we just need the last chapter of the Bible. We wrote a lot of it. We just need you to wrap this shit up. Could you do it?
We wrote a lot of it. You just got to just wrap it up.
We covered a lot of the God stuff, but we just got to wrap up all this Jesus stuff. So if this feels
funny.
Like, are you ever just like, is Magneto in hell or in sort of the white hot room? Like, how much checking do you have to be? Because it is so dense. And let me also say, before you answer that, the comedy is so, so important in these latter days of this. I feel like. So shouts to you for your, because you're killing that.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. It is a very collaborative environment by nature. It did take longer to make X-Men comic books than it would take to make almost any other comic books, because there were meetings to have and other scripts to read and conversations to have or negotiations or worst case arguments. But I actually there were not many arguments really that I can recall over the last few years. You know, I got to be the first fan of House of X. You know, I was in the editorial retreat and I listened to Jonathan pitch it and just was blown away. I knew that he was coming in with an X-Men story. I didn't know though that it would be, you know, this wonderful canvas that everyone could come in and collaborate on. And a lot of people did. And I think we had way more hits than we had misses, and it all worked. So I will say this too. I'm sure there are people that will really miss Krakoa as the status quo, but we'll very much enjoy what we have to come in 700. And knowing what I know about what is being planned after, I'm like, oh, that's really cool. You know, these stories have always changed. You know, I just think some of the old guard are a little bit, it's like that, that meme, you know, first time, huh? You know, when you're going to get, when you're off to the gallows for the hangman, it's, you know, we've all been around, we've all had our favorite runs end, but we don't love them any less for that. And you know, I hope for the folks that love Krakoa that they will love our end, and I hope that if you are someone who was, your Krakoa is not your favorite comic, that you still love this end. It's a great end. It's one that we've talked about for a long time, and working with Kieran and Al and everyone in the X office, it's, I know that it hits because it hit for them. Like, we would have changed the story. We would have found other ways to do what we wanted to do. And it looks great. I mean, that's all you could want in a comic book, is for it to be wonderful and to have your head spin. It's funny, you know, I get the sense that a lot of this stuff leaks too. Are you guys being able to dodge leaks? Like, tomorrow's comic books I saw all over, House of X 3 is tomorrow, and you know, there's some big, big moments in that book. And those splashes, those pages are just out there. And I go, wow, man, it was a different era. And just going to the comic stands and not even knowing what the comic book cover was. Like, right. Maybe you knew it if they ran it in advance in the last issue. I miss those days a lot. I wish we could get back to, you know, not having solicits. That was something we talked about, too, of figuring out, like, how to lie effectively on our covers that also told the truth, right? That we were obfuscating what we were doing, but managing to deliver a promise in another way and to write our covers. That was something we were always encouraging us to do. Internally.
Yeah, I mean, that's always tough when, like, you pick up an amazing cover, but it's a spoiler for what's to come, you know?
I get it. I mean, we have this crazy, you know, system and world. Like, I'm very grateful for the direct market, but that's why we tell fans all the time, if I could wave a magic wand over all comic books and change one thing, I wish that everyone would understand that the comic readers are the secondary market. You know, you are you're the rebuyers for the retailers. The retailers are the ones, you know, that have to guess about how much of a comic book that they can sell. But, you know, if you can take the guesswork out, if you can pre-order your comic books, you know, pre-ordering your comic book, whether it's a creator-owned or a Marvel book or a DC book, you are voting with your dollars to extend the life. You're essentially picking up a series that you like.
Yeah, like, right.
You know, and enough people do that, enough people vote with their bucks, and all of a sudden a 5-issue run becomes a 10-issue run, becomes a 15-issue run. You know, we watched Immortal Hulk tick up like that.
Oh, yeah, it did. Right. It was awesome.
It's such a good way to look at it. I haven't thought of it that way. It's really...
Yeah, it's why we are very boring when we're going, hey, please pre-order this.
Yeah. But,
you know, especially in creator-owned where, you know... It's there's a lot of product out there that retailers have to juggle, and that's actually why for the book that we're announcing this week, I printed a retailer ash can. Mm-hmm. I was like, fuck, you know, I can't tell them how cool this is. They're just gonna have to read it, and we just got to do it.
I had a couple of hopefully quick ones for you. One,
sure.
I feel like there's still a little bit of confusion about Jonathan Hickman's plan for the X-Men. At this point, he's handed it off to you. This is your ending. Is that right?
Well, that's right. We knew that Jonathan, you know, and he's talked about this. There was either going to be, or were you going to move into what Jonathan had basically had in a loose form of an end to Krakoa, or was everyone making their comic books and loving their comic books, and did you have more to say? And so sometime probably a year before he bounced, there was a meeting when everyone voted and on a Zoom, and you know, I don't think everyone quite understood that they might have been voting Jonathan off of the island. but honestly, you know, that his end would have been different than this end.
Yeah.
Because it just would have involved other elements. That said, you are still getting this a cataclysm of both of their making and not of their own making, the mutants. Mm. You know, everyone seemed to be pointing out as a gotcha in the early days of Krakoa, while Jonathan was still there, the things that maybe didn't work about the island. But those were things that we were counting on as flaws to exploit it, to break it and have fun breaking it. I mean, you know, those were all stories. And I think we did a really good job mining the external stresses and the internal stresses of Krakoa. You know, Orcus, I think, was a great, enemy for mutantdom, against what they viewed as mutant supremacy. You know, here's something that we haven't tried yet. And honestly, that, you know, if it felt like a lot of comic books, it really has not been that many comic books. You know, Jonathan wrote 21, 22 issues of X-Men, and I got more than I ever dreamt that I'd get. I got 35. Not counting, you know, Marauders and everything else. And by the way, if my only experience with this, some of my favorite characters, and it would have been Marauders, I could have died happy, sincerely. Yeah. So it was all, you know, it was all gravy after that. You know, and honestly, Jonathan is such a wonderful collaborator in so many ways, and doesn't get enough credit, I think, for how funny he is. And, you know, he made sure that Pepe Larraz was available to launch that X book, that he easily could have been the artist, you know, of Inferno, or left to some other great comic book that he didn't draw, but Pepe wanted to draw X-Men, and Jonathan was like, what better way to be able to do that? These guys have a good shorthand. They work well together. And what a setup for success. I couldn't have asked for a better partner, a better gift, really, than that status quo.
I do want to ask you, just because I'm shocked Justin hasn't brought this up yet. We have been loving the Tony Stark Emma Frost relationship. Yes.
Oh, fun.
What?
I'm praying it goes on. Let's keep this going. It's the most interesting thing that happened to Iron Man in so long. I love it.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you're having fun. You know, we, it's funny. I think it was Mark Waid and not Timeless, but I forget which comic book it was, where they came to me and they said, hey, we're throwing to some crazy stuff in the future that may or may not happen. Any problem with us maybe mentioning the marriage of Tony and Emma? And I was like, you can mention whatever the hell you want, as long as I don't have to do that.
Yeah.
And you know, it's sort of, I was sitting there going like, shit, there's really a way that that works. And I'm just going to keep it simmering. And then when I realized that they were both going to be at their, like, the lowest valley of all of this fight against fascism, and she, the White Queen, could potentially be down in the Morlock tunnels. And I was like, yeah, I got to take a swing at this. And it, I think it worked. You know, we're getting Iron Man to, you know, it'll be, I'm turning in 20 next week. And, you know, that's a story where, you know, the sober former drunk superhero with like the champagne loving mutant that they've never gotten really along. It's very seductive for the sort of War of the Roses angle, right? Like they're at each other's throats. They're fighting together. Oh, do they have feelings for each other? And then, you know, whatever happens next happens. But no, it's been fun. It's also been a good, I think, experiment. You know, if I was going to a Marvel retreat tomorrow, I'd go, we need to look maybe at ways where these books and these characters and these family of books are very siloed, you know, and that shaking them up and breaking stuff and ripping them out. You know, it was maybe only possible because I was sitting in both chairs. You know, there's a really good possibility that the writer of X-Men was not going to be simpatico with the writer of Iron Man. But when Christopher Cantwell was leaving the title, I was like, does anyone have plans? Like, can I park there? Can I double park? Because I really wanted the Phalanx to be a not just an ex-villain, but he's such a good Iron Man villain, both for Tony and for Iron Man, I think, that and this you know, this all that technology going into a Sentinel program just made sense at that moment too. It was a good bit of business if it worked, and that was actually the ask that I had. I was like, hey, is it possible that we could possibly do this? And then it became, well, there's a lot more possible, actually. And, you know, again, I don't know exactly how well it did, but I know that that was good business for the selling of an Iron Man book. Well, it never hurts to put Emma Frost on a cover of a comic book. Now, I've seen it both ways, though. I've seen people that hate that Emma is a supporting character in an Iron Man book. I've seen people say that they don't like Tony married. I mean, they're kind of married in quotes, but that's what I loved about it, is that it was a fake marriage that actually kind of set roots.
Well, they had such
classic rom-com setup.
Well, and that's what I was going to say. It's very moonlighting. It feels very like old school.
It actually is. Like, yeah, I didn't know if anyone here would remember moonlighting, but that was actually the pitch. I was like, it's moonlighting. I'm doing moonlighting and with Iron Man.
That's moonlighting just hit a service. I forget which, but I was cool. just watching.
Yeah,
it
did,
man.
Yeah.
It's a great, great show. Wild
it's great.
Show.
It's weirdly totally great.
A comedy at the same time.
Yes.
It's a great romance. Yeah.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. Totally.
And I don't know how much you can talk about this, if at all. I know that further X-Men plans are going to be announced at South by Southwest on Thursday. But I'm curious about you. I mean, I think everybody kind of presumes that at least most of the current X-Men team is either going to be moving on to other things while new people take over. Are we going to see you on further Marvel books? Are we going to find out about that at some point?
I don't know. I'm always going to talk to those guys. I'm very privileged. I breathe rarefied air that they want to work with me, and I never take any of that for granted. So I'm also, there's a part of my brain, my suit that is like pulverized from, you know, it's you know, X-Slack. You have to understand, I think all of this for me goes back to 2018. So it's a huge amount of like output, and it's a different wattage, you know, like writing the Dark Room is me alone. I talk to Scott. I talk to my wife, who is like effectively my editor on all of this stuff. And that's it.
Oh, that's nice.
Like, yeah, I mean, it's great. Like, she's, you know, and she's really, really helpful and is a very good editor and a good sounding board. But, you know, there is the X-Men part that was such a different beast, I think. Obviously a huge privilege to be able to do, but also to talk to Jordan, talk to Kieran, talk to Al, and make it all work, and then retreats, and oh, the Avengers need this. And there's part of me where I'm just like, where's a place where I can go hang my hat I've been in the counterterrorism unit of the FBI now for a long time, and now I want to go down to the X-Files where nobody even has the phone number, you know, and like I'm just down there, and there's, it can be as horrible, it can be horror, it can be whatever. I'm just gonna go, like, I need a little time to just decompress. But I am talking to them about something fun that I think is coming together, and you know, I have a reading chair that I haven't used much. I'm gonna go sleep in the chair after I turn in X-Men 700. Like, let this beard grow out. And
yeah,
and,
you need to rip really Van Winkle that about. Shit. Yeah,
love it. But again, like, what a joy it was to be able to make these comics with these wonderful artists. To have Josh and to have Phil and to have. Yeah. Lucas and so many other talented people along the way. It's like, my God. And I can't tell you how like crazy it was last San Diego to be standing in a real honest to God Hellfire Gala was bananas. It was just, so you know, seeing how fast that's when I knew really too, you have a sense of the enthusiasm for this, you know, like within a week of seeing some of those designs, we had seen the cosplay on Instagram and you're like, okay, cool. This is hitting. And it's also covering the story that we don't want to talk about. And, you know, if we made lives easier, and I did, I went to a retailer meeting at Emerald City Comic Con, and I was there actually for creator owned to talk about the new Image comic. But I also, you can't help but talk about X-Men, and there were a lot of really nice comments of going, hey, that was a nice thing to have over the last couple of years, an X-Men line that was cohesive, that had people talking about it in the shop. And that's what I miss too. I miss sort of just being around the back issue bins and like talking about comic books, you know.
Oh, yeah.
That's the other reason that we want to support these comic shops. They're real oases of culture and an otherwise kind of shitbox reality.
We've talked about a bunch of stuff here. Like you mentioned, there is an Image book you're going to be talking about later this week, but is there anything else you want to plug? Anything else people should be checking out?
I have a Substack that you could subscribe to. It's just my name, Jerry Duggan there. I've tried to debut whatever I can there. I have the new Image work that I'm really excited about. The book that we'll be announcing this week is actually timed. It'll be the first issue arrives on the same day as X-Men 700, the first week of June. I didn't quite plan it like that. I slid from May just for load balance issues, you know, to just make sure that we're not shipping too much product all at once. So I'd like to take credit for it, but I can't. we'll be announcing the return of Deadeyes soon. There's a lot of that comic done. And then obviously Scott's been drawing. And then David O'Sullivan and I are talking about a new collaboration. And, you know, he and I have a comic book, two comic books. One's called Analog, one's called Paladin of Axes. And Analog is something that is on a front burner again for 8711 and Chad Stahelski. And so I had a meeting last month with them. They're still moving that ball forward. And the Analog script is in like really good shape. And, you know, again, these are all, you hope all you can do is kind of cheer them on at a certain point. Or if I'm lucky enough, I get to provide writing services or just listening and commenting as both a fan of the folks that you're in the room with. And there's a real chance that one, you know, could make some noise. And so those are the things that you just, it's fun too, because being able to switch gears either into a movie or TV lane, or I'm doing a little work on a cool video game later this month. Mm. Those things keep the comic book brain young. You know, it allows me to rest that part of the brain so that it goes, hey, I have an idea now for, you know, West Coast Hulk. Let's pitch that. And off you go to go. I know the Hulk hasn't been on the West Coast in a while, but here's the story.
Explains all the earthquakes.
Yes. Yeah. That's right. That's right. We have a Hulk-based economy in the earthquake zone.
I like that comic book brain gets pushed to the back. It's like, hey, wait, what about West Coast? Hey, West Coast Hulk over there. How about, can I get back up there?
That's how it works, you know, is to rest that part of that, you know. That's also a good writing tip, other than try and work with the best artists that you can. That you know, if you're staring at the page and the cursor is not being fed, then you walk away, and your brain doesn't stop working on the problem. It will just work in the background. Excuse me. And that's what I love about being able to be as busy as I am, because I can kind of punch myself out on one thing and then sort of go, okay, it's time to go do something else. And it automatically responds. It's like a video game. The heart monitor increases, and I have more life.
Nice,
awesome, Jerry. Everything is fantastic. Really looking forward to all the stuff coming up from you.
Thank you so much for the kind words. Really appreciate you guys. I hope you like X-Men this summer. I hope you like the new book. And when Scott and I are ready to come back out, we'd love to debut pages. We can
give you some
new colors. It's really like Scott really leveled up on this one. It's really, really cool.
Can't wait. That's awesome.
Appreciate you.
Thank you so much. Have a good night.
Thanks, man. Have a good night.
Bye.
All right, there we go. Bunch of stuff you can check out from Jerry, of course. He's got X-Men and Iron Man going on. You can check out The Dark Room that's available in stores and online everywhere. And the stuff that's coming out, mysterious stuff from Image coming later on. There you go.
Mysterious stuff.
And we are going to move on with our next section, which is my favorite section because you all make it up. It is your audience question. And for audience questions, all you got to do is drop a question in the comments on Facebook, YouTube, X, Twitter, or Twitch. But in the meantime, while we're waiting for any sort of questions there, we'll see if they come in. We're running a little long tonight, but that's all right. Yeah. What are you guys drinking? Did either of you make Brett's cocktail? I did not. I feel a little
bit. I also didn't. I didn't have the right. I'm due a liquor Same store here. Run. But I did make I made some cantaloupe simple syrup. And Ooh. So I made a sort of a cantaloupe margarita with Sue's instead of triple sec, wow. which was nice, bitter, cantaloupe-y fun.
Wow.
I'm having a 6-point stupor.
It's a stoops.
The stoops. Haven't had that before. Stupor. It's pretty good.
Nice. And I'm also drinking a classic Pils Mafia.
Oh man,
Pete, I'm curious. I really have no guess as to what you might be drinking this evening.
You could pull anything up here.
Knock knock.
Just a cup of gravy. Oh, Landshark.
Landshark. Oh, there we go.
Wow,
great. Also, just want to give a shout out here to Mr. Coach Walker for watching on Twitch. I don't always make the show live, but this interview is so great. Thank you so much, Mr. Coach Walker.
Yeah, shouts to Twitch fam. Love seeing some folks popping
up. Dude, I'm telling you, so glad we're on Twitch finally. Reaching our people.
Huge Twitch guy, Pete LePage.
Yeah, and I also want to give a shout out to Nat Towson, who was watching us on Instagram, said, hiding in the bathroom and watching this. Thank you, Nat. Appreciate it.
Sounds sketchy, bro.
That could mean, does he need help? Is he being, is there a murderer?
Are we going to go help him?
90% Maybe? Of the people who Close. Watch the show watch in the bathroom. That's just some hiding. Stats we get. We get those stats.
Can't prove.
It's just some stats. I get a breakdown of like, are you watching on laptop, mobile, in the bathroom?
Are you in the bathroom?
Are you hiding? Are you in
Are you alone?
Are you scared? Running? Are you okay? Do you need help?
Yeah.
Are you in the trunk of a car?
Mm-hmm. This is from Stanley. Did you watch the Oscars? Any surprises or opinions? And to be clear, either talk about surprises or opinions, but not both.
Not both. Yes. Choose wisely. There actually weren't, I will say, surprises. It was great. I was surprised how great it. What a great
show. Good show. I think it helps when you have a bunch of movies that are all pretty good.
Yeah.
Like, but seriously, like, I think there's this feeling when you have a lot of movies that people are like kind of on, they feel like they're just there because they're Oscar bait movies. And it becomes this, why are we doing this? Oh, my God, we're celebrating these movies that are mostly okay. Here's the one or two movies I really like. They're not winning. I'm annoyed. This year, pretty much all the movies, I would say even the movies that I didn't like that much, were still pretty good for the most part. So basically when anything won, I was like, yep. Makes sense. Sounds good to me.
Yep. Well, and also, yes, and I agree. It was a nice, also things were like spread out a little bit. It wasn't just all Oppenheimer. You got some Poor Things wins in there. Anatomy of a Fall, very fun. Great movies. But great I just
musical
mean, like,
performances.
The music was great. The show
what was your favorite?
Was
the
great.
Cheetos number from Becky G, Pete?
No, it was probably, Billie Eilish and Phineas.
Eilish, Pete.
Really?
Not Ken
Gosling? Guy.
I mean, that was fun. The production value of Gosling's, but when it came to the
there?
Real singing.
You love Simu Liu.
Yeah, you do.
Oh, yeah. He killed
all the Kens.
Yeah, they did a great
Slash?
Job.
Slash was there?
The ultimate Ken. I've always known that Slash was a Ken.
Yeah.
The show in general, Kimmel was very funny. The John Cena bit was great. Mulaney was super funny.
That was funny.
You didn't like the John Cena bit?
You didn't like the Cena bit?
I don't know. I mean, it was brave of him, you know?
Was your problem that you didn't see anybody there? Like, there was nobody there? Like,
yeah, it was just...
He was invisible the entire time. Yeah.
You wanted to see Peen.
No, I definitely didn't. Thing.
You wanted the full
All the messy stuff was great. That was very fun.
The dog. Honestly, Alex, I thought of you when the dog clapped. I was like, you know who loves this? Alex Albin.
You want to hear a fun fact about that? They had like the clapping dog arms. Messi's trainer, who I'm forgetting the exact name of, Laura.
What, Alex? You're forgetting the name of Messi's trainer? That's a huge Hollywood player.
She took the dog arms home with her. And has been posting things like just going places with the dog arms and making the dog arms do things. Great stuff.
That's fun. Taking advantage of a great situation right there. Mm-hmm.
And those are actual dog arms.
Yeah, sad. Shouts to Messi too, who gave.
Talk about Messi. The situation where they had to murder Messi too. Woof.
Get the bandsaw. But in general, I thought it was a good show. Al Pacino, perfect, no notes.
My eyes.
This has been often said, but the end of the clip when you can just barely hear him say, "What happened?"
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah.
Can I just say, like, I understand these are good moments for ridiculousness. They got to stop putting people like Al Pacino at the end of the program. This has consistently happened for years at this point. Yeah. They're like, here's an elder statesman of Hollywood who's come out. It's clearly too late for them. They're like, what's happening? What's going on? I have no direction.
But also, like, that's part of it, though. For whatever reason, they've now made this part of it. So keep it going.
End in a disaster every single time. Let's go for it.
Great show.
It was just so stressful, though, because you're like, oh, God, this old guy, isn't he supposed to say everybody in the category? He's just going into the envelope. We don't even, you know, like,
that's
right,
let's get to it. He doesn't. We know the names.
And then he was like, what happened? Because he's like, I don't know what I'm doing. Why are people reacting?
I see Oppenheimer. Correct.
He released a statement on it, and his statement was like, they told me, actually, they specifically instructed me to not say the names of the movies, period.
Yes.
And everybody was like, that's not what the problem was at all, Pacino. That's not what we were focusing on. That's not what you should release a statement on. But whatever, it's fine.
I was
stressful, man.
It was great.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I really like the way that they had actors up there saying all the nominees, giving us a little bit.
Yeah, that was fun.
Even though some of them were like, a little impersonal. Shouts to Tim Robbins fucking it up.
Yeah,
but like it was worth it for Nick Cage.
Yeah, I mean, come on,
Justin Hammer presenting to Tony Stark. That was pretty
good. That's what I'm talking
about. Fun stuff. Good times. We got another one here from the excellent named They Pay Me in Wimes. How are you guys prepping for the new X-Men animated series coming out? I've been rewatching the previous animated series and find myself calling my wife Bub in passing.
Smart. That's good. Yeah, that's the way to do it.
I'm doing the same. I've just started. I'm going to try to crank through as many as I possibly can before we hit the relaunch.
At this point,
I'm probably not going to watch any of them, but maybe later.
Not even one?
I want to. I have a lot of stuff to do.
I've been drinking and getting mentally ready for it.
Why are you worried? Why are you so worried?
What if it sucks, man? Then you go ruin the animated, you know, all the great stuff that came before.
It's still there. It's still what there. If anything it still sucks. Exists.
What if everything sucks?
Exactly.
What if life is
what
bad?
If you open up that the beer? What if you open up a land shark and it's just a Wolverine that's too tall inside? You know, not everything can be bad.
I just loved it. The image of me open up a wall, you know, and then be like, you're too tall. It was just way too fun. Hey, can I ask you guys something? I wanted to ask Jerry, but we ran out of time.
Oh, sure. Yeah. If it's about the writing process on X-Men, happy to answer.
Oh, great. I bet not like that at all. The Dark Room makes me think of this interesting philosophy of objects holding power, right? Do you guys believe that objects have power? I know that I do. I used to own a pair of lucky Pumas that brought me luck. Do you guys in your life ever have anything, an object that, I don't know, maybe you felt comfortable around or really liked, or you felt like gave you some kind of extra something?
Great question.
Thank you.
I have a, I don't believe hardcore in that, but I definitely had a shirt, or I have a shirt that I wear when I pitch. That's like the
lucky pitch shirt.
Lucky pitch shirt. Mm-hmm. And a couple, I'm not very superstitious, but I do like to be like, this is that. It's almost like, do the thing. This is the thing that is that. And I believe in that sort of human finding the grooves. We've created the groove, go back to the groove, live in the groove.
Ooh.
Yeah,
that's deep.
I don't know. I think objects.
It's nothing.
Don't you buy the same shoes over and over again?
Well, that's what I was going to say. Is that I think there are things that I care about, that I have feelings about, but I don't know if it necessarily has like a mystical power behind it, so much as this is very comfortable for me, or this is something that brings along a pleasant memory, which I don't think is magical per se, so much as just that's how life works. But
you have a Mr. Rogers mentality with the shoes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So you've never like seen anything or touched anything that you thought was kind of magical or had power?
No.
It's okay if it's
no. No, I'm just cycling through all my joke answers that are inappropriate that you'll get mad at me about.
Good. Well, yeah, that's good. Good thing to be doing then.
I've got some magic rocks, sure.
Yeah, but like, listen, I'm sitting in front of a shelf of nerd stuff, and some of this stuff is just for set dressing, but there are other things that like do mean something to me. So there you go.
Yeah, this is the guy that puts up little things when we're talking about different TV shows and stuff.
Exactly. So my answer is yes, everything has power. Why don't we move on to our next section, which is trivia. And for that, I'm going to turn it over to Pete LePage.
All right. This is the part we give back to the lovely audience. It's an opportunity to win $25 free to Midtown Comics Online. Because if you had $25, you go to a comic book shop. All we need is a brave volunteer and you'll win $25 to Midtown Comics Online.
You don't even have to be that brave, let me say. It's a pretty...
Overuse the word brave. You know what I mean?
Alex, Schoikler in the comments coming for you.
Oh, that I didn't do an audience question? We don't do every audience question every time.
Wow, so. Alex with the roast.
Oh, also, man. I don't know where it is. I'm sorry. Do we have anybody to do trivia?
Do one of you guys want to do trivia?
No, someone's going to say. You got to give them a second. You made it like you have to be brave. You have to be a whole thing.
Yeah. Ooh, Easy Reader is going to do it.
All right.
There we go.
All right. Here we go, Easy Reader. Today's trivia is on comic creators and a small nod to the legend, Richard Lewis, RIP. Please listen to all three options before making your selection. Here we go. Question number one. Kelly Sue DeConnick is a creator on this amazing comic book. Is it A, Bitch Planet, B, made up sounding name, but also magical, or C, Zitto Kazan? Zitto Kazan.
Nice.
The name sounds like someone who makes a pizza on naan.
Yeah, that's a great... Zitto Kazan makes a pizza on naan.
Yeah, all right, it's right. A is correct. Here we go, question number two. This creator started with mini comics, did amazing art on demo, and is an Inkpot Award winner. Is it A, Hecky Schwoon, B, Becky Cloonan, or C, Dom DeLuise?
Wow.
Probably Dom DeLuise.
Yeah,
that guy's
His inking on like, what did he do? Moon Knight?
Cannonball Run?
Yeah.
Oh.
Both? Are you giving it away?
B is correct. Here we go. Question number three. This legend is known for helping to create Vertigo Comics at DC. Is it A, Karen Berger, B, something more creepy and old school, or C, Clement von Frankenstein?
Whew, that's a hard one.
Yeah.
Who could it possibly be? A? Is it A?
It is Karen Berger. That is correct.
Wow.
Nice.
Incredible. Yeah,
and we also, again, we got Michael Tillman coming in, naming the movie.
Yeah, coming in
early. Stealing Schuyler's gauntlet twice in one episode.
Well, whew. Easy Reader, congratulations. You're getting a $25 gift card to Midtown Comics. Shoot us an email at comicbookclublive@gmail.com, and we'll get that out to you. Is the secret movie Men in Tights?
Yes, the 1993 All-Star cast, that is Men in Tights.
Amazing.
Yes, that was the photo that I believe was used in the In Memoriam segment featuring Richard Lewis.
Now, before we wrap up here, as we all know, new comic books are coming out.
Alex, I thought you had a big announcement.
Wasn't there a secret quiz someone asked about and you were going to talk about in the next episode? What happened with that?
Absolutely not. New comics, though, are coming out all the time, this week included. Pete, what are you looking forward to?
Oh, man, so many great stuff to talk about. Can't wait to talk about them. Are Bones Dust?
Why are you taking my shit?
Yeah,
you
but no. What that. Comics? What comics do you want to talk about, Pete?
Are Bones Dust.
Yeah, I know, but what comics do you want to talk about?
And then Petrol Head number 5.
What comics do you want to talk
and
about?
And Transformers number 6.
Oh, Transformers, that's a good one. Pete, Justin, what about you?
Pete just eating all our lunches. Our Bones Dust number 4, shouts to that. I believe it's the last issue. Very much looking forward to it. Can't wait to read that. But I also want to shout out The One Hand number 2 by Ram V. Really annoying this sort of comic experiment where we had The One Hand and then The Six Fingers, I believe is the other title last month.
Hello, my name is Inigo Montoya.
And we're getting
prepared to die.
Nice. Really can't believe I let you finish that without saying.
Well, you say the six-finger man, and it's going to happen. So you tell me what's up.
Dark Spaces Dungeon number 4 by Scott Snyder. Very creepy series.
Oh.
That's a fun one / very dark one. And Blue Book 1947 number 2. We were just talking about believing in things. I'm not one to believe in
You don't believe in aliens?
Not a lot of UFO arrivals, but this book gets me the closest to that I have been.
Wait a second. You grew up all the way in upstate New York near a well, and you don't believe in UFOs is what you're telling me?
You stand up some like country bumpkin who believes in anything that falls off the turnip truck?
Well, when you say it like that, no. But before, it was going to be a yes.
Well, things really changed around here. I am looking forward to Helen of Wintour, number 1 from Dark Horse Comics. Yes. That's Tom King and Bilquis Evely reuniting after Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow. So that's very exciting. Also, Suicide Squad Dream Team from Nicole Mayans bringing Dreamer into the mainstream DC universe more fully. So that's an exciting event as well. And shouts out to I Heart Skull Crusher, number 1 from Boob Box by Josie Campbell. Very fun, post-apocalyptic, all-ages tale. Very ridiculous, very enjoyable. Mm-hmm. And folks, that is it for this week's show. Bunch of people we need to thank. I want to thank Jerry Dugan for coming out to talk The Dark Room, X-Men, Iron Man, all the stuff that's coming out from Image. Check all of that out. Megan Brennan for talking about Kira and the Baby Space Princess. That's available in stores everywhere now. Max Brailier for talking Last Kids on Earth, which is all 9 volumes out in stores now.
You get it.
Last Kids on Earth and, Last Comics on Earth, Too Many Villains. It's coming out April 30th, so check that out. Next week, we have another packed show for you. Tom Akel is going to be here to talk about Rocket Ship Entertainment, Mitchell Martinez to talk about Wannabes, and ready to scare the pants off of Pete, Patrick Horvath is going to be here to talk about Beneath the Trees. Where It's happening.
No!
It's happening. Very excited about that.
I'm going to be away next week then.
Comic Book Club News, our daily news podcast. Check that out. Marvel Vision, our Marvel podcast.
Here's the Mind Killer.
Sons of a Gun, our DC podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub to support the show and all the shows we do. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple, Android, Spotify, or the app of your choice. At Comic Book Live on Twitter /X, Comic Book Club Live on TikTok and Instagram, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
Take care of yourself out there. Godzilla minus one, baby! Come out!